Hi, listening friend. Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Mark and Friends. It's June 4th, 2014, and I don't know if your life is a bit crazy, but with all that's going on, all that can derail your progress or maybe your devotional time can be consumed with all these other thoughts, these distractions, these life crises. Let me remind you, or let me again exhort you to understand this truth. God is on the throne. He is in charge. He is sovereign. He is good. His character is true. His will prevail. And you can be settled in the fact that he loves you, he cares for you, and he desires and has designed you this very day to walk in his ways. And I hope that included some time spent reading the Bible, praying up the day, asking the Holy Spirit to order your steps. And regardless of the circumstances or the situations around you or how crazy life can seem or appear, he's in charge, and his will be accomplished. And the sooner you can kind of relinquish control and seek him out and ask him to work through the situation, the better you'll end up and the easier life will become. So, Jason, can I get a testimony on a little high-octane life that you've been living? Have you come down from your sugar high from that Homer Soda Festival yet?
Yeah. You know, I didn't feel too sugared up, although we did come home about 3:30 after the festival. Maybe it was 4, and we all fell asleep until like 5:45 or 6 o'clock at night, so I think we all just kind of crashed and then woke back up. But I haven't had a desire to have anything remotely like soda for the last number of days. So.
Yeah, it wasn't Jacob or one of your children saying, "Daddy, can we just have some water?"
Yeah, about halfway through the soda festival, they had, "Can we just have some water, please?" And we're like, "No, you'll drink soda today.
We bought you those VIP passes, yeah. and darn it, you just keep drinking."
Yeah, it was kind of funny because there was something where they had like some fruits on it. They were like, "Can we get some of the apples?" And I'm like, "No, eat those French fries." You know, we're like, "What's wrong with us?" Yeah. You know, and so it's a good parenting day.
You said, though, it was a very wonderful, like, family-friendly event, lots of people, lots of activities, and really a success from your point of view, and it seemed like a lot of people really enjoyed themselves.
Lots of families. We saw tons of families, and nothing negative. There was nothing that we walked away going, "I didn't like that." We've always been to something where we walk away and we go, you know, we couldn't go in that one area. People seemed belligerent, or it was a little rowdy over here. It was a little, I mean, every bit of it, and we were there for about 4 hours. Every bit of it was family, was really family friendly. Even where there was music playing and all that, I mean, everybody around there was caring for each other, and I just thought, like, wow, this is really an uplifting day. There's not anything where you're feeling like, I mean, everything was really great. We really enjoyed it. So, I mean, just kudos to Kate and all the folks over there at Homer who did that. They did a really great job, I thought, and it was really well done, and it was unique. I think that was probably our favorite thing, was that the food that was served was not on, there wasn't the funnel cakes and the normal kind of fair and, you know, festival food. I mean, it was all very unique vendors, unique things to see, and really a lot of unique people to talk to. And so we really enjoyed it, and then tons of unique soda. So
yeah, I think you said you might have sampled as much as maybe 100 different varieties.
Yeah, so 100, and we had a 2-ounce cup, so we drank, 200 ounces of soda over the course of 4 hours. I was sodaed out. But I did have a soda. It was caramel cream soda. And the whole time I was sipping it, I'm thinking, I need a scoop of vanilla ice cream with this. Because it had, the caramel taste was so good. So it was really interesting to be able to taste all those. And the Homer Soda Company is open on Friday and Saturday. I'm not sure the hours. I think like 10 to 6 or something. So if you miss maybe going to the soda festival and you want to try some of those unique sodas or that, stop on over there and see Kate and her crew over there, and you can try some unique soda. I think it's $10 for a six-pack, which really for a real cane sugar glass-bottled soda, $1.60 a piece, that's really not that bad.
And that's in downtown Homer, Illinois.
Downtown Homer, you can't miss it.
Yeah, and I think next year, Great News Radio will have a booth and we'll set up some kind of prize drawings and be involved. And we appreciate Kate. We interviewed her a week ago. I think it was on Monday or Tuesday. And she shared some of how God has been leading her to acquire this retail store and then expand it through various means, and how they prayed up this Homer Soda Festival. And this was the second year. Next year it'll be the third year. But it was kind of a fun testimony, and to hear Kate's vision for it and how hard she worked behind the scenes. And it seemed like thousands of people showed up. So
yeah, she was working hard that day, I got to tell you, because I wanted to track her down and say hi to her. Tasha and I both did. And it was hard to get a hold of her. Mm-hmm. And finally, when we did get a hold of her, was inside the actual soda shop as she was running around with big cases of soda filling stuff up because people were buying it faster than she could fill it.
Mm. The Homer Soda Festival. You'll be hearing more about it in about 8 or 9 months when we gear up for 2015. And you geared up for, was it a second grade celebratory or end of year session where you said it was kind of neat to hear what some of the children were writing? And
yeah, they did a little award ceremony at my son's school. He's in second grade, and what they did is they got up to practice their oratory skills. They got up and they read kind of a poem, but they had to fill in the blanks. So the poem would start out, I am this, I like this, I'm scared of this, I feel this. And so after that, they had to fill in the blanks with kind of personalize it to what they were. One kid had this great one. He said, I am flexible, fun, and fair. And I said, that's such a second grade kid. Like, it was hilarious.
Hey, that'll preach, too. Like, three Fs.
That's what I thought. I thought, wow. I said, you know, you got some three sermon points already.
Yeah.
You build off of that. So they got up and they read them, but I was really encouraged because probably half or better of the kids cited in some way that they wanted to know, follow, or pray and have a great relationship with God. And so I thought, you know what, those of us who feel like things are slipping need to go maybe spend some time with some young. There's a generation out there that wants to be madly in love with the Lord, and so our job is to be that guiding light for them. And so I thought, what a great thing. So they did that, and then they each had created a unique award to give to a friend. And so it was something that they thought, and then the teacher had awards for them individually. So my son got the Voracious Reader Award because he's read like, I don't know how many books this year. But
yeah, our little professor.
Yeah, so it was great. But the kids were just fun, and there was a lot of adults, and a lot of the parents showed up. So, again, just love seeing the parents invested too. But for me, to see a young generation that wants to love the Lord, that helps to keep me on mission. You know what I mean? Because we can get so frustrated with news headlines and all those kinds of things. And then to know that, hey, you know what? There is a generation that wants to love the Lord. And from second grade till when they get to be whatever age, let's be that light for them some.
Yeah, you can get really jaded by the news and all the negative reporting and forget, like I started the program and we prayed up, that God's in control, God's sovereign, nothing is going to happen outside of his permissive will, and things are being attended to many times behind the scenes. In fact, yesterday, as I had Yu Chow in the studio talking about some of his testimonies, the simplicity of witnessing and how just an individual showed some care, some concern, reached out to him, saw this international student with his luggage. He had just arrived, said, hey, do you want to know more about the Bible? I thought that was like, wow, it would take me maybe weeks to build up that, you know, conversation to kind of lean towards, hey, do you want to study the Bible with me? Dave Crabill right away, hey, do you want to come over and study the Bible? And he's like, the Bible, I've heard about that. In fact, he cited an example that in China, he watched a lot of movies, and they were always using, as he put it, God this and Jesus Christ that. Now, not in a healthy way, but he still, because of his maybe limited knowledge, thought, wow, I guess America's a Christian nation. And I'm like, well, not the way it was being used, but because it was being overused in a lot of sentences, he said, he was thinking, oh, a Christian nation. And so he knew about the Bible, and his grandmother had a Bible, but it was through a kind act of somebody just inviting him into their home. And he said the biggest impression was just that they said, oh, go ahead, lay your coat down in our bedroom. And he's like, wow, why would they trust me? Why would they allow me to go into a private part of their house? And he was just amazed at that. And then how David and Ruth and the Christian community embraced him. And then as he started reading the Bible, and he said, you know, with his limited English skills, he started looking up all these Hebrew names and these towns because he wanted to know them. And he didn't have any of the biblical background that we have. We know the Christmas story. We know about King David. We know some of the stories of Jonah, and he didn't have any of that. And as he started reading the scripture and hearing the message proclaimed, then he started saying, you know, this Jesus is an amazing leader. And then it became more than a leader. It became a savior. And
it's interesting. I think it was last week I read an article that gave a really unique perspective on maybe the problem that the church is having. And this is not individual church, but this is a big C, so all churches. Is that it said, number one, when they took some poll data and they found out that generally somebody who accepts the Lord has probably heard the gospel presentation 5 to 7 times before they truly accept the Lord. So the average person, it wasn't like a one and done. The average person was multiple times they heard the gospel story in different contexts, and that brought them nearer and closer to the Lord. Number one, that should release us from this idea that it's all about me, mm-hmm. that I have to be the one who seals the deal or else it just doesn't work. Why I bring that part up is because part A and part B are intimately connected. Number one, it takes somebody 5 to 7 times to hear the gospel in order to accept Jesus Christ. Number two is they said the biggest problem facing the church right now, and the reason the church is lagging, is because what they're finding is people are not making invitations. So what is happening is you're witnessing to somebody, they're not accepting Christ, but you're really number three in that 5 to 7 chain of people that have to share the gospel in order to kind of crack through that hard heart. And so what you do is you become, you're like, well, you know, I mean, I guess I'm just no good. I'm not an evangelist. I guess I really just really can't do it. So you stop making invitations. And they said the reason the church is experiencing what is experiencing and lagging is because we're not making invitations. They said in their data, I think they said 23% of the people they polled out of 100%. That means, so you're talking 77% of the people. Only 23% of the people said that they were actively making invitations for the gospel. Mm-hmm. Honestly, actively making. 77% of your polled Christian population is not making an invitation towards Christ. Mm-hmm. And the Bible's very clear. It's the invitation that brings the people across. And our data even shows 5 to 7 times, which means that we have to be tenacious about it because we don't know where we're at in that 5 to 7. And we can't take it personal. You know what? I think if we take the gospel, look at, if I share the gospel with somebody and they're ambivalent to it, they just are like, I don't really know. I think you're kind of crazy. And I take that personal, then it's not about the gospel. It's about me. If I'm taking this personal, then it's not about Jesus. It's more about me. And the reason I don't share the gospel is because I'm scared I'm going to be the one who's going to be somehow offended by this when the offense is not mine. It's Christ.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we have to get outside of that bubble that it's about us, because it's not. If it's about you, you'll never share the gospel, because you get 2 or 3 people in, you'll realize that dealing with hard hearts hurts, and you won't ever want to share the gospel again. And so we have to be about making those invitations, and we have to be about not taking it personal. Look, if Jesus was going to take personal the offenses against him by us, he never would have gone to the cross. I mean, because we offend him in ways that are way out of our conception. And so I love that he made that invitation, because I think that we've got to, in those kinds of situations, just make crazy invitations. We don't know how it'll go.
Yeah.
Would you like to study the Bible? No. Okay. Not a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I mean, in some circles, it's kind of almost unfair. We've got to be real careful, too, because I've been in places where they're like, well, that's a pastor's job. And I'm just going to be honest, as a pastor, I'm going to tell you, I can't save everybody. I mean, that's impossible. Now, the bar is maybe a little higher, because I'd be a pretty crappy pastor if I didn't share the gospel. If people are like, well, you shared the gospel, no, I really just don't really do that. I thought you were the pastor. Oh, yeah, well, you know, I mean, that's just not my spiritual gift. Well, it's not considered a spiritual gift in the Bible. It's actually considered part of your normal walk. Jesus, when he said, therefore, go, he told them to be proclaimers of the gospel, which would be people who would share the good news. So we have to be about doing that, because you never know what kind. I've shared gospel with people where I thought it was an utter failure. And then 2 years later, a year later, 9 months later, they came to Christ. And I didn't own them coming to Christ. None of us owned him coming to Christ. That was God who owned that. But I got to celebrate that I was a part of it. You know what? I'm just going to be honest with you. I don't think the celebration is any bigger if you're the one baptizing or you're the one who's been cheering it on. I think the celebration is the same, because in heaven there's no bigger crown. The Bible doesn't say you get to heaven and God's like, oh my gosh, here he is. I mean, I don't think Billy Graham's going to get there and God's going to be like, Billy, my man. You're the best. I don't think that Billy's going to get there. In front of him and behind him are going to be 2 guys who came to church faithfully, loved their wife faithfully, witnessed faithfully, saved a few, and God's going to go, Chuck, Charlie, Billy, welcome to the kingdom.
Yeah.
I don't think he's going to celebrate, pull Billy out, and they're going to have a ticker tape parade for Billy and that kind of stuff. I think it's going to be like, Chuck, Tom, Carl, Billy, good to have you all here. Glad you're in the kingdom. Still more work to do. Let's get busy.
And I think part of the witnessing is just telling our own story. And I know you and I are going to be doing an interview with a couple authors about telling the story. And we all have a unique story. And I know when you were sharing how sometimes people have that major life shift. They were maybe in drugs or whatever they were doing, far from God. And then that transformational moment took place, where others have a very common, I grew up in a Christian home, I always knew the Lord, and that's just as powerful. As we recite how God worked in our lives, it will reach people and point people to God because he's the theme or he's the important one in the story. And I think we do get caught up with, oh, I'm going to feel rejected if they don't come to Jesus. And in that continuum, maybe we're bringing that negative seven person down to negative five, and then somebody else comes along and waters and shares their story, and they get a little closer, and then somebody else comes along, and that's the point of decision that they make. And then there's others that, like the senior saints, that are helping nurture and helping them to grow, but we all have that role in that continuum to point people to God.
Yeah, you can be a brilliant communicator. You can have a lot of charisma. You can have all these different qualities. But I'm going to tell you what the quality that Christ brings to witnessing, the quality that Christ brings by his Holy Spirit, his power is utterly different than yours. And so you can't own those moments because those moments are not yours to own. And therefore, your testimony, whether it was I was in drugs, I was in pornography, I was in this, I was doing that, or I was a church kid since I was born. I went to church. I got baptized. I followed the Lord faithfully. I was in the choir. I did handbell. I mean, whichever testimony you have, every single one of those testimonies when laid at the cross is the same. It's exactly the same. Again, there's no bigger crown for the guy who comes, I was a drug addict and then I was saved. In fact, Jesus might go, you know what? We had to work a lot harder on you, didn't we? But you know what? My grace was sufficient, wasn't it? That's what my word says. And you know what? I mean, I'm going to be honest with you. I would venture to say this. Now, maybe some of you right now when I say this, you're going to nod your head yes. Some of you are going to go like, oh, I can't believe you just said that. But it's not the first time, so let's just keep going. Look, I wonder if God has to work equally as hard to keep you church folk in line as he does to save the drug addict. And that's because sometimes us church folk get a little haughty. Sometimes us church folk get a little too beyond grace. You know, we love the grace that God has poured upon us, but we aren't always so graceful to others. You know, we love to be judgmental in a place where we ought to judge, but we ought to love. And we let judgment become bigger than love. And so I wonder if we're going to get up there and you're going to be in line and it's going to be the drug addict and it's going to be the guy who was hedged in pornography and then it's going to be you, you know, church folk, been to going to church all your life, been, you know, hand choir, the whole nine yards, Sunday school. And God's going to go like, man, it was a fair amount of work to get you to come into the kingdom, drug addict. And oh my gosh, pornography guy, that was really tough seasons of life, wasn't it? And oh, church folk, jeez, you really, it was tough to keep you on the rails too. I mean, and I just think that's true. And I think that's that humility. You know, James 4:7-8, submit then to God and the enemy will flee from you. Draw near to God and he'll draw near to you. How is your submission going today? Mm-hmm. Because I'm going to tell you what, mine some days struggles. Because it's not easy to submit then everything to God so that the enemy will flee from you. In fact, I'm just going to be honest with you. I was challenged recently by a senior saint on that verse. So some folks were asking me for prayer, and I was sharing with the senior saint. We were praying together, and I was sharing, you know, wow, it's just been a lot of, seems like spiritual attacks on people and that. And he goes, well, you know what the problem is? It's submission. And I said, well, no, wait, talk to me more about that. What do you mean by that? He said, well, the Bible's very clear. Submit then to God, and the enemy will flee from you. So if the enemy hasn't fled from you, then what haven't you submitted to God? He goes, let's work that one backwards and realize the problem's us. And I go, ah. And you know what? I'm just going to be honest that the church is full of people all week long who are being oppressed and attacked by the enemy. Why? Because we haven't submitted some things to God that we need to submit to God, because he will take care of them in his power. He has the power, not us. We're powerless. I'm like one of those junky dollar store batteries that, you know, you put in your radio and it lasts a couple days. Mm-hmm. And Jesus is like, you know, the jumper cables on the big power station. And, you know, he puts it in there in the radio. I mean, it's come on. Let's be honest with ourselves. Because if we're not honest with ourselves, we're going to become prideful. We're going to become haughty. We're going to become all those things. And then listen to what... I would challenge you to go read Isaiah chapter 11, because in Isaiah chapter 11, God uses the Assyrians to cut down a prideful forest that he calls Israel. And he cuts down that prideful forest because they've become too haughty. They thought they've got it all figured out. They thought that they had it all worked out. And God says, no, you know what? I'm going to use the armies of the earth, the Assyrians, I'm going to bring them in, and they're going to fell you down. What's interesting, though, is at the end of chapter 10 and 11 there, the Assyrians get haughty. And then it says, and they too shall be brought low. So God goes, wait, you guys think you're the axe? You think you're chopping the forest down? Let me grip this a little tighter and show you who the real axe is. And what I love is right after that, right after those verses, talks about the coming of the Messiah. From the stump, thou shalt become a shoot of Jesse. And it talks about the power and majesty of Christ. Because that's where when the forests of pride are felled, that's what remains, Christ. And so that's what we have to center our focus on, is Christ, not on us. Because we're going to become frustrated, we're going to become filled with anxiety, shame, guilt. All these things are going to fill up inside of us, condemnation, things we can't submit. And it's only through God, only through Christ, that we can take care of any of that, because it's already been taken care of at the cross. We worry about so many things that have already been reconciled and taken care of at the cross. I guess, do you trust Jesus that he has taken care of it?
And none of us like to submit. Oh,
no.
We want to be in control. We want to be in control. And that is really the key, is submitting. But we can submit to God because of his character and who he is. And he is worthy. And he's all-powerful. So you better learn to submit. The sooner you learn to submit, really, the better.
Yeah, we're going to do a... It really felt like God pressed against me with this. I was in a coffee shop, and it really came to me. Just, we're going to do maybe a 2 or 3 sermon series in the next number of weeks. Not this next week, but the week after, we're going to start it, about how God is. I mean, the scripture talks about God as a lion. And I think that we've come to the place in our Christian walk, big C church, not little churches, but big C, all of us churches, where we're far too comfortable petting him and not praising him. And we need to really understand that there are utterly dangerous qualities of God. And we need to understand that in light of his holiness, that the Psalms say that our God is in heaven. He does as he pleases. It says in Hebrews that it is a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the living God. And those verses wouldn't be there unless they were a warning to us not to get too comfortable. Because when we get too comfortable, we start to fall into our own preconceptions, our own things, the things that we think. How many of us have said, you know, things were just going along and all of a sudden it just seemed like my whole life blew up? No, what happened is you put the recliner in full recline, you turn the heat on it, you turn that little thing that vibrates it on, and you thought, oh, life is good. And God goes, I'm going to have to get you out of the recliner. And it's like when I was a teen, we used to have that thing where you bent, where you tipped your chair back, and then some kid would always inevitably come behind you and grab the chair and pull it down, and you fall on the floor. That's, I think, what happens. God goes, hey, wake up. Whomp. The Apostle Paul said some of them have fallen asleep, and I think that many of us have.
Hey, dear listener, don't fall asleep at the wheel today. Be attentive to God's leading, his prodding. Ask him to order your steps and then witness what he's going to do in and through you. He loves you. He has a plan and purpose for your life. Well, thanks for listening. Thanks for being a part of our radio listening family. This is Mark Burns and Pastor Jason Schiffo with the Ministry of Great News Radio. God bless you, and have a great day and night.